Hey, it's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy. So, Stacy, we were at Bilderberg. What were your thoughts?
Oh, well, I guess I was surprised at the whole sudden mainstreamness of it, that there were BBC journalists up there and, you know, other mainstream journalists from the UK. John Sargent had just left when we arrived, and amongst the people up there protesting, it was quite a party atmosphere, and it was interesting that everybody knows the truth about markets and Kaiser Report, and it was interesting that this has now become mainstream news at a time also of the likes of these conspiracy theories that are now facts, like the NSA spying and capturing all data on everybody globally.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is what Julian Assange said 2 years ago, that these companies, the phone companies and the social networking companies, had a interface, a back-end interface for the government. And at the time, this was dismissed, but looks like so much of the WikiLeaks turns out to be true. And you've got some apologists coming forward. Of course, Murdoch's Wall Street Journal is trying to spin this as somehow good. The line being that to ensure 100% security, the government needs to be able to monitor 100% of your activities and communications.
Yeah, I saw one progressive blogger arguing that this program is good because it did stop, they claim, the NSA claims or the, you know, FBI claim, it did stop one guy. I forget which case in America, but there was one case. It stopped one guy, even though they've been capturing all your phone calls, all your conversations, millions and millions and millions per day, just to stop one guy.
Yeah, well, this is creating a permanent underclass, because this prism is essentially a vacuum, or a Hoover, as they say in Europe sometimes, that is just hoovering out all the money in the economy. And this is why you have the top 2,000 or 3,000 families in the world control trillions of dollars and 70% to 80% of the global wealth, and then the bottom almost 7 billion in the world share the remaining 10% of the wealth. So this is enabled by this type of technology that is a huge vacuum. Now, what that does, of course, is it creates violence, instability, unemployment, domestic violence, due to the economic stress that this program has caused. Do they count the domestic violence figures? No, they only count the very high-profile, very religiously, you know, positioned, if you will, so-called terror, which many times that in itself is also staged. So the argument doesn't hold up.
Well, in the intersection of these two, the Bilderberg Group with this NSA information is, of course, the heads of Google, Microsoft, Amazon, all of those participating in this NSA program, whether they know it or not, they're saying they didn't know they were. But they're up there meeting in private, off the record, under Chatham House rules with politicians, elected politicians, and Lord knows whether they designed this plan at a previous Bilderberg meeting under similar circumstances, or whether or not, you know, all their tax breaks are coming from this. Now, one of the articles I was reading last night about this NSA program, they were saying, you know, that big super center, that NSA super center up in wherever it is, Nevada or something, it's the size of like a city. Well, somebody said, well, former, you know, programmer from up there, tech guy, he's saying several of the top IPOs are now run by of the top tech companies who are run by billionaires who became billionaires through IPOs previously worked at the center. So they go from the center, start private companies. There's about 50 of them, he said, and about 10 of them are now billionaires with IPOs. So he was suggesting that some of these social media technologies are actually created there at the center and then transported to the public sector and then IPO'd, and that it is a backdoor way from the very beginning to get information on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the Pentagon started an incubator of startups not long ago, and I'm sure that keys into it. And it goes back to John Poindexter, who almost 10 years ago now wanted to create the terror futures market. And this was on the back end of the first dot-com boom of the late 90s, where things like the trading of box office futures contracts in a simulated environment became popular. And then John Poindexter said, let's apply this to the terror market and create terror futures contracts. And people, there was an outcry that you can't trade terrorism as a stock or a bond. So they pulled that program publicly. A lot of people speculated that it was private. But there was a whole generation of technology folks that grew up during the dot-com boom. And they drifted over to this space here, which is the surveillance space, you know, the surveillance. And the point is, I guess you're making there, is that the market is highly manipulated and rigged. You know, chocolate markets now come out as rigged. All the bond market, LIBOR market. And so now you have a class of billionaires that were created to assist in this 360-degree pervasive surveillance state that's just draining the economy of all its economic vitality.
Well, what I'm saying is that this is something off of a what the media would dub a conspiracy theorist site. The likes of Alex Jones would have reported, you know, 5, 7, 8 years ago that these companies going public on the New York Stock Exchange, like, say, I don't know which companies are because they didn't mention it, but like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or LinkedIn, where you're filling in information about yourself. Mm-hmm. The article was suggesting some of those were actually created at the NSA Center. They were designed at the NSA Center to get the most insight from you. Now, I have a friend who's in the intelligence community, and he said that to me about 6 or 7 years ago, that Google asks you questions on signing up for a Gmail account that would was classic NSA. He said it was classic NSA questions that designed to elicit a specific response that it seemed innocuous to you, the normal person, but it was actually telling them a lot.
Right. Well, it all is all being housed in that one big database. In this new NSA-built secret, so-called, you know, not-so-secret installation in the U.S., which is huge. And a couple of people that are fighting this, of course, Julian Assange. I mean, his stock went up now based on this. And Kim.com, of course, in New Zealand, has been fighting this and has come out. You know, he pointed out that the Hollywood establishment, the copyright cartel, targeted him and got the government to, you know, fly the black helicopters and seize him and arrest him. And we're finding out that's now looking more and more like exactly what happened. So, you know, it's come, you know, anyway, to get back to this idea that they claim it's for security purposes and to have this surveillance state. And it's just, you know, I mean, if the founding fathers were around, they would have a big question with that, I would think.
Yeah, well, also in some of these articles, Washington Post, Guardian, they've done deep, you know, background on this and interviewed people who were previously involved in this program and know what's going on. Is first of all, they said that this NSA program can tell your thoughts you're forming as you're forming them in text on your computer. So they can stop you from even coming up with ideas of liberty or freedom or anything that they don't want you to have. They also are also that one of the whistleblowers said that it's not about foreign terrorist threats, it's about the domestic threats. Ron Paul emerging, they would have every single voicemail, phone conversation, email, any data on him that they could decide that they want to threaten him with of divulging in order to step away and stop causing, you know, problems for the establishment.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a tendency toward monoculture and conformity. And this is really accelerating that whole thing. So any variations, any kind of ideas that go against this one idea is considered antisocial in some way. And there's a new rule, right, in New York, where if you disrespect a cop now, it's considered a felony. So you'll have stormtroopers working for the centralized Stasi, who is collecting money, information, bankrupting the society. You know, it's pretty predictable, really. I mean, there's no checks or balances. It's just predictable, isn't it? It's 1984. Thank you, George Orwell. Thank you, Britain, for producing such a literary titan.
Well, I'm going to say it again, and I say this every time we talk about stuff like this. You've got to read Alone in Berlin by Hans Falada, because the fact is, it's the population itself that demands and seeks and wants this, and they get brainwashed perhaps by the propaganda or convinced by the propaganda, and the propaganda, you know, works subtly on their prejudices and fears. So say that the disrespecting thing, you already see the images. It's a black kid in the ghetto who's disrespecting the cop, right? And that's why the population, the majority population there is like, yeah, we want a more yuppie way of getting those people we don't really like. You know, this is a way to instill respect by these people.
Well, let's talk about the heroes and all this. Apparently, Glenn Greenwald, who we've had on Kaiser Report once or twice, is who we talked about recently on the Kaiser Report as being on the Bill Maher show and exposing Bill Maher as a racist. By the way, Bill Maher on his show last night defended this program because he said that it's not because he thinks it's right, but because he's frightened. And if you have... You know, being a frightened little titmouse is not a great qualification to have a TV show. You know, maybe America needs people with TV shows who have some spine. You know, maybe they should, as a role model, you shouldn't have a cowering, boot-licking racist like Bill Maher. But anyway, Glenn Greenwald, who is a champion, I mean, he's put himself out there more than one occasion, and he certainly has this time, and he's really got his. I saw he was on, I guess, Anderson Cooper show, which is mainstream media in America, and talking about this. He's a real champion.
Well, obviously, Ben Franklin said those who would give up a bit of security, give up a bit of liberty in exchange for security, deserve neither, and that's the message. That's the response I have for Bill Maher, and I watched his last week's program last night. I started to watch it and I just had to turn off because he did a one-on-one with Michael Ishikoff, the journalist who used to be like a more of a tabloid journalist who's become a more serious one now. And he's written a book just now, Michael Ishikoff, about the war on whistleblowers. And Bill Maher just got really angry and he said, you know, I'm so sick of this term whistleblowers, and we apply it to all sorts of people, like this AP story. Like, you know, they published this information about, a double agent that was working for the U.S. inside Al-Qaeda. I don't think they should be saying this information. I don't see that, you know, we're at war. And he was going on and you're like, shut up. I had to turn it off because I couldn't watch any more of this.
Well, just like these technology guys like Zuckerberg and the Google guys are completely owned by the Stasi. And in exchange for lots of money, or Verizon is totally owned by the Stasi, and in exchange they don't pay taxes. I mean, a lot of these companies who like Amazon and these big Google, they don't, why don't they pay taxes? Why doesn't the government want them to pay taxes? Well, they're providing a service that they pay for called being the new Stasi. So in exchange, they don't pay taxes. That's how they get them to do all this stuff with, again, huge money incentive. But just like these corporations are conflicted, so too people like Jon Stewart, Bill Maher, Stephen Colbert, the people who in America are held up as the the counterculture, who are giving you the quote, the real story. That's I've been saying for years. That's they're just pushing the same line, but to a college crowd that's, more drunk and high on dope than the other part of the society, but it's the same.
I was also noticing yesterday that Freedom House, which ranks freedom around the world on various levels from press freedom to internet freedom, said, I guess that the US is below Russia. Everybody likes to say Russia's evil and bad and everything, so and laugh and ridicule as if it's some, third world country dictatorship. Well, they're saying that the US has less internet freedom than they do, because they also said that that Russia does have some of these programs that can monitor traffic, but it appears they don't actually do it. They don't use it.
Well, in our journalist career over the past 10 years, we decided that we would pursue the truth, no matter what that entailed, on these scandals, economic scandals. And since the U.S. and British media would not broadcast these things, we ended up on Al Jazeera English, Russia Today, France 24, and additionally on the technology front. I came up with things like Karma Bank, which is organized myopsies, which is a protest platform, or Pirate My Film. Obviously, in the title, it's all about fighting the copyright cartel. So everything we've been doing on the technology and media front has been opposite to what everyone else has been doing. The sacrifice is that, given our level of understanding and technological prowess, it would be worth $1 billion, clearly. But I felt that what's the point of having $1 billion if you are aiding and abetting financial and copyright terrorism? I'm not big on terrorism, and I don't accept their definition of who the terrorists are.
Well, so this is the interesting thing going back to Bilderberg, is that I guess either yesterday or today, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is heading up to Bilderberg. And it was obviously, they only announced it yesterday. They didn't, obviously, however, it must have been in the works for quite a while, and they knew he was going. But they announced it yesterday, and his office said something along the lines of, well, at least we're fully transparent about attending this secret meeting. Because remember, it's Chatham House rules. So you're not allowed to mention ever publicly what you talked about. You're not allowed to talk about what you discussed, which is just remarkable, considering not only is he an elected official, an elected bureaucrat hired by the and paid by the taxpayer of the United Kingdom, but he's meeting in private with groups that he's allegedly investigating at the moment, like Amazon and Google and Microsoft.
Yeah, like we were saying yesterday, according to Adam Smith's definition of what makes good free market economy, is you need competition, and you need the government needs to stop people from colluding. And they should do what they can to prevent people from meeting in private to fix prices. And that's one of the roles government needs to do if you want to have a free market and you want a capitalist economy. And so here's the Prime Minister doing what he can to aid and abet the secret meeting to fix prices and to encourage collusion. So it's not free markets, it's not trade, it's not. So, and then how is this country doing as a result of his violation of this basic tenet of free markets and the Enlightenment? Well, people are suffering. Wages are growing at less than 1%, and there's extreme pain. throughout the country. That now, I don't know. I mean, I can't think of any brown-skinned person that's done as much damage to Britain that David Cameron has done.
Well, the populations around the world, or certainly in the UK and the US, live under certain rules, they think. And those rules are like they're told, go read The Wealth of Nations. We live in capitalism. That's what we have. Then they're told, read the US Constitution. These are the rights we have. These are the, read, these are your basic rights. These are the basic rules of the game. And yet, over and over, you look at it, and it's becoming more and more apparent, I think, and that they don't believe in any of those rules. They themselves, or any of the rules that get in the way with their profit, maybe their control, they just decide to ignore it. Whether it's the Fourth Amendment rights against illegal search and seizure in the United States, or First Amendment rights to free speech, or Second Amendment rights to bear arms. Certain things they decide they don't like, and they're going to get rid of them. Same with the quote you just read from Adam Smith, that all industrialists are going to get together, the same industry, and they're going to conspire against the public. He uses the word conspire. They're going to conspire against the public. And while the government can't ban these meetings, they certainly shouldn't help and facilitate and participate. These are, but we're told, okay, we'll just ignore that section of Wealth of Nations. That doesn't matter. Just take the other bit. But of course, what you're doing is like you're building a house, and you decide you don't feel like putting that bit of the foundation there, and because it's in the way of a grand design you have in mind. That's more convenient to you, and say a big party, and of course it destabilizes the overall structure of the whole thing.
Well, to escape the tyranny of absolute rule of kings of the Middle Ages, the required an intellectual spasm like the Enlightenment, and you had a quantum leap of thought forward, and that carried certain educated folks a while, a couple hundred years through a few revolutions. And through, but I think we've hit peak liberty. We've hit peak liberty at some point in the last 30 years, depending on how you define it. And now we're slipping back into something else, such as you've got the rise of the surveillance state, the prison state, and the economy is contracting, so there's not very little social mobility in countries like America, which used to have a high social mobility. So we've hit peak liberty. So we're on the backside of the whole idea of this thing that people would say is liberty. So and I don't think that's going to reverse anytime soon. So I think this should carry for another 10, 20 years. I don't see any. I mean, there's. I don't see any spasm, any intellectual group spasm like there was for the Enlightenment that took a reverse course. I don't see that happening anytime soon. So, for the next 10 or 20 years, I think we're going to have this erosion in freedoms and civil rights, and the encroachment of the police state and the prison state. So I'm glad I'm not in my 20s. Because it would the next 20 to 30 years should be a write-off. It should be pretty hellish.
Well, so the, but the population itself is still scared, so they'll want to give more power to the central authorities, and their memories over the past 20, 30 years is of republics, rule of law. And they went out and voted. They pressed the button for that guy. That he must be a good guy. We like this guy. So they don't know what happens when you give more power and authority. Even programs, stories told, like Game of Thrones or the Tudors, that series of the Tudors. You see what happens. We were talking about the Boy King character in the Game of Thrones, and he arrives as a Boy King, having never had power, and he's a sweet guy. He's a relatively sweet kid. And then the more and more these a person realizes the absolute power they have and that nobody intervenes, nobody will stop them. You see absolute cruelty, whether it was King Henry VIII or this character in Game of Thrones. This is the nature of absolute power.
Right, and that the tools of torture these days are evolving. So you have a lot of mind torture that goes on with these databases that are, and we make the comparison to what happens in the casino, where casinos have adopted behavioral economics to nudge people into doing stupid things. And that's been taken on by the Wall Street and the City of London and the financial industry to nudge people into doing stupid things with their money and with their lives and buying houses for with 120% mortgage like Bradford and Bingley or Northern Rock were doing at the height of the housing bubble. That's not, you know, there's no economics that would support that. That's pure financial cruelty. That's the, you know, King Joffrey's in charge of mortgages and he wants you to suffer immeasurably. So he's going to offer you 120% mortgage so you can willfully throw yourself off the precipice of your net worth and crash on the rocks of penury, and he can laugh about it. So now we have more massive bubbles forming in the bond market. When that bursts, there'll be a huge, cruel and unusual punishment awaits those. We have George Osborne's Help to Buy scheme, which is a cruel way to entice people to buy more house than they could ever afford, which will end horribly. We have big bubbles forming in the stock market. Japanese markets in free fall, going through intense volatility. And these are all programs created by psychopaths, essentially armed with massive computer power, who have nothing on their minds other than to watch you cruelly kill yourself.
Yeah. Now, one of the, you know, the codified rights of man, in order to protect from the capriciousness of a, you know, of a absolute ruler who can act on whim, who decides today he doesn't like you or he doesn't like his family and he's going to kill them all without any, you know, rights to the family being slaughtered, is stuff like habeas corpus and stuff like that. But you look at the tyranny of the markets as well, you're saying. So they've become very capricious and nasty, the flash crashes, the you know, the wild jubilation of like the fake crowds gathered around Henry VIII to celebrate his third wedding, you know, that, and then he slaughters them all. You know, it's just, this is like the markets, like the wild jubilation, all-time highs, and everybody in Japan was celebrating the Nikkei rising, and now it's like drops in sudden angry bursts of, you know, capricious nature wiping out people's wealth, and all because of these artificial tyrannical constructs around it, the rigging and the interference of these markets and the propaganda needed to support markets and politicians.
I just read something that's very, very revealing. Is Bernie Madoff quoted recently that guards in his prison are constantly asking him for investment advice. So I think this neatly encapsulates several issues. The people who bought into the scheme knew that it was criminal behavior, but they did anyway because they thought he had an inside track on his criminality. The people guarding him after being caught for his criminality don't have any concept of making money in any legitimate way. They will go to a fraudster who's in prison for committing fraud for investment advice because the whole idea of associating your worth with your net worth has been shattered. People have no self-esteem whatsoever. Think of those people, those guards asking Bernie Madoff for investment advice. They have no self-worth at all. No integrity whatsoever. They have no pride in what they do at all. Their esteem of themselves must be so horridly low. I mean, they see themselves as just maggots, but they want to be rich like Bernie Madoff. I mean, this is so emblematic of the culture. You know, if you flip on the TV, what do you see? You see people who consider themselves, have their opinion of themselves as maggots, who are just feasting on the fraud.
That's another interesting part of this emerging police state that is just slowly emerging. In 5 years' time, it'll be like we won't have known anything different. But right now, you're seeing these things like the Gulag Archipelago, the Gulag letters, the letters from the Gulag emerging, whether it's John Kiriakou, the CIA whistleblower who's in a federal prison somewhere in Pennsylvania, and he's there for 2.5 years, and he's sending these interesting letters. And you have Weave, the troll in prison, also in Pennsylvania for 3 years. And it's interesting to see these letters from the Gulag Archipelago that we've developed in the US to keep us safe, to keep us safe from these computer hackers and people like this, and black people and Muslims, to keep us safe from these people. We're beginning to get an idea of what actually life is like in these Gulag archipelagos.
You know, some people want to die for a cause, and to deprive people that option is cruel. I say bring back dueling. You know, dueling, you'd have hotheads dueling each other, and it would satisfy, and don't do anything about it. I mean, the people who want to die for a cause that they believe in, like their honor, and they get into a duel with some other hothead who feels their honor has been compromised, I think that's an outlet, a very important outlet for a certain element of society who really wants to die for a cause. But in this diaper society where everyone is being coddled by the state and raped simultaneously, it's like Jimmy Savile runs the Pentagon. You don't have any honor or attempt at honor or any honorable thing happen whatsoever. It's a battery farm. It's a headless chickens in the UK running around waiting to be fleeced and sliced and diced and served up to other battery farm victims.
And, another sudden little glimpse of tyranny is, I think, this story in the last week that also emerged, which got overshadowed by all this other stuff, but the Monsanto wheat. Okay, there is no approved wheat, a genetically modified wheat. Even in the US, it's not approved. There's no approved genetically modified wheat. Part of the reason is because the seeds, they travel very far on the wind, so there was no way to contain it within a certain field. So now this has been found in Oregon. It'll be interesting to see. Monsanto's denying that they had anything to do with it, but it'll be interesting to see whether they exercise their patent rights over, and sue this farmer who suddenly found this genetically modified wheat in their field. But it also shows you the power that they have. They can unleash that any day in every single field. It'll be like a virus, a pandemic. It'll spread across the entire US and then into Europe very quickly, that everybody will have this one genetically modified Monsanto wheat product.
Yeah, these seeds, of course, are what are called terminator seeds, or they have the technology for terminator seeds, where they don't reproduce, so you have to buy new seeds every season, and the seeds only grow if they're fertilized with Monsanto-related products. So, one of the basic ideas of life on Earth has been that food, cash crops, are self-regenerating. People don't get a bill at the end of the month for the pollination that goes on between crops, as conducted by honeybees, for example. People don't get a bill at the end of the month for the amount of sunlight that has fallen on the face of the earth. People don't get a bill at the end of the month for the fresh water that flows down from the Himalayas. But companies like Monsanto think that, hey, they see that and they say, hey, here's a way for us to make money. We'll destroy the entire concept of life on Earth and monetize it so that we can make a few extra bucks. And for why? So the CEO wants to buy a new car to impress some underage girl to take her out and have his way with him. I mean, that's his motivation. There's no sound motivation here. It's just all white guys looking to be, you know, chase underage girls. That's the motivation.
Well, if you think about it, so Monsanto, how their products work is they leave you defenseless, essentially. So this is how that farmer discovered that he had this genetically modified wheat. What he did is there was the weed there, and he went and put the pesticide on the weed to get rid of the weeds in the field, and they wouldn't die. He couldn't protect himself from the invader. Mm-hmm. He was left defenseless. Mm-hmm. And had to go to Monsanto to get something to defend himself. The same thing, the same sort of mindset is in place now, that they leave you defenseless and you have to come to them for protection. You have to pay the toll if you want to be defended.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw a story a couple of days ago that someone was predicting that within 20 years, machines will be licensed and have the legal ability to marry other machines. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, this presumes that machines will soon be copulating and giving birth to machines. And this is where we're heading. I mean, evolution, if you're a student of Darwin and a student of these scientific trends, you can see how machine and artificial intelligence is taking over. And humans are becoming extinct. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of species that have become extinct recently due to human activity. And humans themselves will become extinct. It's kind of like the French Revolution, isn't it? You know, Maximilian Robespierre started the French Revolution, more or less. And then they killed everybody in the revolution during the Reign of Terror, including the creator. Robespierre was also killed. And at the end, nobody was alive, and they never mentioned him again in France ever again. His name became gone from history. And humans, they had a revolution, a technological revolution, starting with, you know, the wheel from the caveman, which went into Henry Ford, which went into mass production, which went into Monsanto, and it's going to end in extinction. And the machines will be have taken over, and they'll wonder where they came from, and they'll have an existential crisis, and there'll be a French machine reading French machine verse Descartes, wondering, I click, therefore I am, and the whole freaking cycle will start all over again.
Well, going back to this Monsanto thing, is that, you know, this notion that you're defenseless, that you're left defenseless, it reminds me of the days, basically, we're still all snake oil salesmen. This is the economy, right? That they prey on the vulnerable, the people who are the most vulnerable. And you see that with all these, you know, the labs, the race to identify the gene that causes breast cancer, the gene that causes, you know, prostate cancer, and then you lock it up. And that's how you have a toll there. You're a troll sitting under there with, you know, people who are desperate for help or to live, continue living. And you have to pay them this huge fee in order to do any work on a cure, any work on therapy for that particular disease or any testing. So, for example, we all know this Angelina Jolie story, that there's a BRCA1 and BRCA2 genetic code that causes the certain breast cancers. She tested for it. Now, it would have cost over $3,000 to get the test to see if she had that. That's because this one company has the rights to the gene, you know, to any research on that gene. And they hold up all sorts of research at Oxford University. I know they were researching cures and you know, therapies for breast cancer, and then they got this bill out of the blue. This is how this story even came out, that these guys were troll patents sitting on top of this patent, you know, prey. It's like a snake oil salesman sort of situation, though. They're just preying on the vulnerable. They're, you know, nasty trolls.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of these hidden inflation stories where the cost of God-given benefits or whatever are rising. And in this country, in the UK, I think the epidemic of obesity is a good story because the price of food is going down, but because of intellectual property laws, people end up eating stuff that's not really nutritious food. They end up eating plastic and garbage and substitute, and the price index doesn't show any inflation, but all of the real food's been replaced by our fake food. And they say, well, the price hasn't gone up. The classic one is they substitute hamburger for steak when the price of steak goes up, and then they say, well, the inflation index hasn't gone up because of a basket of goods. Well, that trend has been going on for decades, and they've replaced the hamburger with slime, pink slime, right? That's the what they make McDonald's hamburgers out of. And then the pink slime got too expensive, so they replaced that with sawdust and tears, whatever is the next thing. And then eventually, people just become obese because they're just stuffing garbage and plastic down their throats, and they become very, very sick. And that's very, very expensive, but that's not counted as inflation. So it's a weird inversion of everything. And but the price of these things goes up. The intellectual property that's controlled by Monsanto or other people through patent laws and copyright laws.
Well, that pink slime is one of these situations. If you give up a little bit of liberty in exchange for security, you deserve neither. In that, one of the rationales for this is, so basically they just wash, like they put all of the beef through, they wash it with ammonia and bleach and like all sorts of stuff. They just like rinse every single thing out, every single possible pathogen and bacteria, because people don't want a story of some old lady getting some, disease and dying, some a bacterial infection and dying. So in order to protect from one person possibly getting that, they'll bleach and remove every single possible nutrient in their food product.
Well, for one fraction of a second, the thing that's in your mouth feels like a hamburger and tastes like a hamburger and smells like a hamburger due to technology of scent technology, fabrication technology, and reprocessing technology. For that 1 second, it's in your mouth where your brain is tricked into thinking this is food. But for the rest of the time that item is in your body, it is making you very, very sick. It's making you spiritually, emotionally, and intellectually and physically ill. But for a second there, it does simulate food. So,
A friend of mine used to work at, it was actually Mackenzie Crook, who is in Game of Thrones for a bit. He used to work at Pizza Hut, he said, when he was 16 or 17. And every time I walk past one of these Pizza Huts all over the place, they're packed and people are sitting there chowing down on this pizza. And he said he never forgets what they had to do before serving this pizza. They would come out of the oven and they would spray pizza scent on it. It was
Right.
called pizza scent.
I told you my brother, he worked at Red Lobster, and they sent in lobster in these big bags that was completely inorganic material. It was plastic, but you mix it in with the lobster as a filler. It's pink, little plastic fluffy bits that kind of feel like maybe it's lobster in your mouth, but it was plastic. And they just mix that in with the other stuff, and they make it a lot. They fill it out, but
But you do. So when I walk past the Pizza Hut now and you look at these people just like seemingly having a good time pushing the piece slices of pizza stuff like product into their mouth, they most of those people don't want to be woken up. They just It's like that character in the Matrix. They don't want to know. They don't want to know about this stuff. They just would rather, they don't want to think about it. They don't want to endure any cost to it. They just want to keep on eating. And by the way, they also think it's they can't figure out how they can't lose weight when they're eating all these fake products. They don't eat that much, they think.
Well, because it's, everyone is biologically predetermined to think pretty much only about the next 5 minutes. So, and once the folks who, I mean, think about it. Here you have an individual whose main concern would be the next, let's say, few hours. They just want to, they think about their next meal, their next conversation with their next in relative or closest in kin. And the next way they're going to amuse themselves. And that's pretty much 98% of everything in their brain versus a football field mountain, a mountain of computers and database technology that is surveilling you through every, you know, hundreds of different ways, observing you in real time, calculating every single thought and action that you make in ways that will deprive you of your livelihood, your wealth, and your sanity. Who's going to win that fight? I wonder.
Here's another thing about just how we humans are, and we just don't want to know the cost. We don't want to know what we're really eating or what it really looks like behind the matrix of our lives that look so, clean and safe and stable. In The Guardian today, Detroit's mountains of petroleum coke are dirtier than the dirtiest fuel. Byproduct of tar sands production is piling up in Detroit, and environmentalists fear Keystone XL pipeline will bring more. Well, it will. Not, this notion that their fear could. Well, it will. It is the dirty secret of Alberta's tar sands. And until the black mountain of petroleum coke on the banks of the Detroit River grew to occupy an entire city block 3 stories high. Now it could become a familiar feature as storage yards and waterfronts across the country as the oil industry in the U.S. and Canada struggles to deal with a glut of waste from Alberta's tar sands production. So you hear people all the time, again, the propaganda, the progressive media, the right-wing media, that we need this energy, we need this energy, and these giant mountains of piles of toxic waste are going to be littering all over the country along the waterways, as they point out.
Yeah. Well, you know, the choice for cleaner energy could have been made 60, 70 years ago. Buckminster Fuller was a scientist who had ways of capturing all the energy requirements from the sun, you know, many, many decades ago. But again, it's a decision towards self-annihilation. So that seems to be on track.
This particular pile in Detroit is owned by Koch Carbon, KOCH, the Koch brothers, which is controlled by the Koch brothers, oil billionaires and backers of ultra-conservative groups, including those which work to discredit climate science and block action on climate. This is the other, just people are so stupid. I mean, the Koch brothers, okay, they were worth collectively $45 billion on Barack Obama taking office. Now they're worth $90 billion collectively. But there are literally peasants out there screeching to high heaven that these men are being subjugated and oppressed and repressed by Barack Obama because of his socialism and all that sort of stuff. And we, we the peasants work for our Lord Koch, and we demand more freedom for him, them. And they really feel like they're fighting for a victimized lord, that these Koch brothers.
Yeah, well, I think this is probably the biggest reason why we're not more actively participating in the Bilderberg Fringe Festival, you know, is that although it's clear that everything that's going on there is wrong, the people who are in this Bilderberg Fringe Festival are climate change deniers for the most part. There's nobody who would see that Koch story and see it as for what it is, that you've got multi-billionaires putting out something called "There is no such thing as man-made global warming and climate change" as a way for them to get u ultra rich. So, on that single point alone is what has kept me, anyway, a bit of an arm's length from the Bilderberg fringe.
Yes, there is a very, vocal hardcore group that they just they'll you could show them the actual script. If I were to show them a CIA script that they themselves kept on speaking over and over, and I had proof that the CIA wrote that script, they would be like, oh my God, I'm like a bot for the CIA. But you show them the same script that the Koch brothers wrote, and I refuse to believe it, that they think these guys are somehow scientific geniuses that come up with scientific greatness and work and have proof of great conspiracies. But I'm trying to find that story from this past week, actually, about the Tea Party working with an environmental group, I think it was Greenpeace, to stop some coal stuff. I think it was like in Virginia or West Virginia or somewhere on the East Coast. And they're actually trying to get either solar or wind power project instead there. So the Tea Party is working to achieve exactly what the Koch brothers wouldn't want.
Well, eventually it'll become too obvious to ignore, and maybe we're at that point of inflection. But up until very, very, very recently, there seems to be an intolerable gap in the manifesto of those fighting the New World Order, that they would not accept the fact that you've got man-made global climate chaos, which is a huge problem.
Yeah, but I agree that most of these people, a lot of people believe the Koch brothers, but that's it worked for Big Tobacco. They just literally took the scripts from Big Tobacco. I mean, they only changed the word tobacco to oil or carbon and things like that. So they didn't even have to do that much work, but I bet you they got paid a lot, the propagandists who did this. And before Big Tobacco, there was Big Lead, and that was the script originally written then that then got used for Big Tobacco. And that was that lead was good for you. Mm-hmm. And this was all the big paint manufacturers in America, actually.
All right. Well, you hear that now, that carbon is good for you. It's what plants breathe.
And there are old commercials and stuff showing you how lead-based paint is actually really good for you. And even though they knew this long after they knew it caused brain damage to children, they still kept on pushing the disinfo on the population that it was somehow good for their children.
Yeah, well, that's the whole. You know, I don't understand why the cognoscenti of the anti new world order people seem to have this enormous blind spot. But I mean, this kept me at somewhat arm's length.
Yeah, and it worked, and the Big Lead, Big Tobacco, and now Big Carbon. They say the same thing, is that it'll cost jobs, and they want to tax you. They want to charge you more. They want to end your freedom. They want to, put you in a gulag if you can't smoke our tobacco without the full cost being paid. But you know what? We are heading to the last moments of the show. This was, of course, The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM, the best radio station in the world. It's been scientifically proven.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's what the Google guys told me. They used their database and they figured it out.
So if you want to continue hearing Resonance 104.4 FM online and on the air, of course, go to resonancefm.com, and you can always donate any time of the day, hour of the week, anytime.
Bye, y'all.